find it. It's well struck from distance. It's another glorious goal. Montes just waiting on the edge of the area, and he's waiting for something like that to fall to him.
Dami Diaz. It's Dami Diaz. It's a cracker. The captain rolls back for years. No, he's got that in the locker. He has got that in the locker.
Experience and youth combined. And for Palmeiras, that could be devastating in this year's CONMEBOL Libertadores.
Hello and welcome along to the Wilson and Windsor Libertadores podcast. We're back in 2024 and myself, David Windsor, and Mr. Oliver Wilson are reviewing match day two of the Copa Libertadores. The greatest, the grandest, the best competition in South American club football. South America's Champions League. We came in with match day one and we had a little, you know, a little wander back into the pod world of South American club football. We're back on match day two. We're in Wilson's absolute, well, it's an urban jungle. Inside the urban jungle, Wilson's got this flat in the centre of Buenos Aires. There's loads of plants. He's got his like 90 screen flat screen TV. Got his golf clubs that he brought across from the UK because he's an addict. It's a great setting, only, and I'm looking to tuck it into match day two.
Yeah, it's the usual David Windsor says, I'm going to talk at this level and then starts the podcast at this level. So I'm scrambling trying to work out the audio. But welcome to my humble abode, so to speak. Look, we don't have remote awnings. We haven't even got a bloody awning. Shows how low I've fallen compared to the place that you're in right now. A tiny balcony, a nice little kitchen diner area, and nice little bedroom at the back keeps the traffic away. And look, it's not about where we're living. It is about where we're living a little bit, because that does make an impact slightly. You certainly have your nerves jangled a touch more for an early game when you're involved in car crashes, being hit by cars, and generally everything else that's taken place on the roads of Buenos Aires. And what is basically the last 10 days of a bucket list of things you don't want to be involved in on the way to work?
I mean, I've loved it, but, you know, Ollie's a bit of a prima donna, so him getting hit by a taxi and then us getting whiplash and a little car incident this week seems to have scratched his Delhi ego. You just gotta, it's just all part of the Argentine melting pot. I'm all in.
Part of the experience,
yeah, 100%. Okay, right. Ollie, I want to start by talking about something that I feel could be a new thing in football. A lot of people don't like so much of the modernization of the game and the game's change and money and the connection between players and fans and other things like that. But there's something that I've noticed that there was a great example of this week that I think could be a big thing in the next few years. And that is, I honestly think we're entering the era of the jacked ref, because this week, John Alexander Hinostroza Romagna, the referee for Independiente del Valle against San Lorenzo, he was popping out of his t-shirt, mate. And I honestly think a jacked ref just gives a different kind of level of respect. He was so strong with all the decisions. Like, it was the best refereeing performance that I've seen in the 2 weeks since being back on match day one and match day two. And he was just so strong. He wouldn't, in South American club football, there is a lot of, as there is in the game globally, there's a lot of diving. There's a lot of trying to con the ref. There's a lot of those kind of antics, let's say. But Mr. Romagna just wasn't having any of it. He was rock solid throughout. Just an absolute ref, absolutely superb ref. If I get a referee shirt with his name on the back, that is exactly what I'd do. Top ref, jacked ref. And what, you know, we've moved along from the days of like Mike Dean, who looks like he hasn't had a chicken breast since 1972. Do you know what I mean? Like, we need big fucking refs. What do you think about that?
It's not new.
Who was the last Jack ref? Uriah Rennie.
Well, I was going to say, anybody that knows American sports will know Ed Hockley, who was an NFL ref who, let's face it, stick the pads on.
We're talking
on
about football, though.
No, but I'm just saying, like, and okay. Ed Hockley actually commanded a lot more respect. Look, he was obviously very prominent as a figure that you would stand out, and you don't want to really know referees, but you know somebody if they're shredded and look like they're wearing the pads when they're meant to just be officiating. So Ed Hockley actually commanded a lot more respect from an audience and from players on the field, I think, than a lot of other referees do, although the respect aspect in a lot of sports is so much better compared to what we see in football. I'd say Howard Webb was pretty beefy.
True.
Like, he was quite a big-bodied guy. You wouldn't mess around with Howard Webb. And it's actually a topic of conversation that we had when we were talking about, I was talking about on a different show with somebody, the incident in the Champions League with Arsenal. And should referees be more of a presence, so to speak. Why aren't they making those sorts of calls? Do they lack the courage because they're constantly being surrounded by big million-pound players? If you have a jacked ref, they don't really care, because if you yell at them or react in some way, they kind of have that confidence and composure of, I could beat the living daylights out of you. Much like myself and a certain taxi driver earlier in the week.
But it is true. If when you get a pump on in the gym for about 10 minutes, you think, go on then. Go on, yeah. Who's having it? Who's having it? So I feel like that's what Mr. Romagna was after.
So I think it'd actually be a great thing to have referees that... Who was it who was really under... Was it Hugh Dallas was like overweight and under fitness?
In England?
Yeah.
Don't remember.
Back in the day. There's been a few of them, though, that you look at and you're like, how are you keeping up with the pace of the game, you tubby guy?
Graham Pohl passed 3 yellow cards and a red cup, I think. Yellow cards and a red cup? Yellow cards in a World Cup.
In a World Cup, yeah, which is not exactly very becoming of an official that you want to see. But that's more mental state of mind than physical state of mind. But I think if you have a physically intimidating specimen as an official, it shouldn't be a prerequisite. But it definitely helps, particularly when we've used this phrase a lot to describe some of the South American football. It's a bit like the Wild West on occasion. You know, it can get very animated very quickly. We had the incident, of course, with the Peñarol Rosario game as well, which kind of shows what you can sometimes get from the stands. Jacked ref is keeping order in those sorts of moments compared to, like, and this is, you know, something that I think you see in the football field as well. Like, the Bolivian players are smaller, not quite as intimidating a presence when you look at the likes of Bolivians that are playing for teams like Bolivar in these competitions, or Atletico Potosi for the Venezuelans as well. I think it's quite similar. So when you get officials from those countries, I do think you get a higher level of disrespect from the players on occasion, which is, again, something that could be looked at. I mean, if you got a jacked 5'9" Bolivian official.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, let's usher in the ear of the jacked ref is what I'm going to say. Also, Kalina was kind of, he had jacked eyeballs, didn't he?
Well, he was just like, if you mess with Kalina, it looked like you could end up in like Uncle Fester's dungeon in the Adams Family. Yeah, like, you didn't want to go too far with that. But that's it. Again, it's important. It's important for an official to have a presence. You don't want to know the official. You don't want to really think about the official. But it is important for them to be able to watch over their jurisdiction, basically, with a kind of a thumb on the press.
Just before we move on from the refs, Ollie, I just want to disagree with you slightly. I actually quite like the referee being a presence on the field, in the sense that I know people say, oh, the perfect referee, you know, it's like great table manners, you just never see them. Like, but I actually quite like it. So when they introduced the rule that if the ball hits the ref, the game has to stop.
Yeah.
I don't like that, because I love the idea that the XG of a ref scoring was always 0.00001, but it was there. So I quite like a ref that sort of gets stuck in.
Well, I didn't really understood that rule as like something that really needed to come in. It's just part of the game. The official is a part of the field. Sometimes they inadvertently get in the way. That's human error coming into it. And actually, a ball ricocheting off a ref and then they having to stop the game is bringing more stoppages into it, which then means the official has to be precise with going back and making sure he drops it to the right player and all this kind of stuff. And then that causes more of a delay. And I think, if anything, particularly in the games in the Sudamericana and Libertadores I've seen in the last 2 weeks, getting the play moving is one of the biggest flaws that they have right now in these competitions, as opposed to it's so stop-start at times, whether it's substitutions, play acting, the dreaded three letters of VAR. But that is a nightmare, absolute nightmare. The game against Gremio I did this week, every goal, the two goals and almost every other incident was VAR'd down to the minutiae, where you have at one point you have a player on the goal line who is in an offside position because he's on the goal line in line with the goalkeeper, but we're still watching people draw the lines and have a conversation for over 4.5 minutes.
Before Ollie goes into the world of negative, can I just start on a positive note? Sorry, let's just start on positive and save the Wilson VAR rant.
There's a theme going on of this trip in Argentina, I think.
Let's talk about the positives. And I want to talk about two special talents, Ollie. And entwined in that is Ecuadorians ending up in a strip club in New York. So fasten your seatbelt. Kendry Páez, who nobody's probably heard of apart from if you're a Chelsea fan. He's a 16-year-old, plays for IDV, Independiente del Valle in Ecuador. And he's been signed by Chelsea. And he's going to move to Chelsea when he's 18. He's currently 16 years old. The best player I've seen for 2 weeks from, you know, under the age of... Honestly, he's the best player I've seen in 2 weeks. Absolutely electric, and he knows it as well. Swagger, lovely touch, tricks, flicks, no-look passes, all of this. Won the pen for IDV early on. bags of talent. Obviously, Chelsea have got a complete superstar. But there is a question mark over him because he was seen in a New York strip club a few months back. Bear in mind, he's 16, and I'm pretty sure he can't be... You've got to be 21 to enter that kind of establishment in the US. So, yeah, but he was
fantastic. That says more on the strip club than the player, though.
Yeah, so, you know, he's relinquished of all responsibility. And you saw another great talent, Ollie, in Endrick.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we saw. It was very funny that beIN Sports billed it on their Twitter as Real Madrid fans, tune into this game when they show the highlights of the kickoff. Check out your new star, Endrick. And I was like, he's on the bench. Tweeted underneath it, like, he's on the bench, he's not starting.
So,
yeah, tune in later on because he's not on the field right now. But we did see Endrick for about 5 minutes at the end of the game. And I would advise Real Madrid to go and protect your asset, because when you stick a €45 million price tag on a young player in this continent and they step onto the field with 5 minutes to go in a game where Palmeiras had well and truly beaten Liverpool by this point, the Uruguayan side, not the English side, obviously. Endrick steps on, walks under 50 metres, maybe like 10 metres into the field, and somebody already walks up to him and just gives him a little elbow, little dig in the back, like, oh yeah, welcome to the game, Real Madrid boy. Like, ugh. And as soon as that happened, you're like, oh no, this kid's career could potentially, if he plays too many games in the Brazilian Serie A or in the Libertadores until we get to July, he's got like 6 weeks. Just hold on tight, wrap him in cotton wool, stay safe. This is an investment for Real Madrid. Looks like he's going to be a really great kid in terms of the 5 minutes that we saw. I think he only had possession a couple of times. Movement off the ball was good, though, trying to find the channels into the gaps. He produced a Rabona cross as like the last moment of the game, pretty much, which is always going to stick out on the highlights, particularly when he's wearing gold boots as well. He knows he's going to Real Madrid. He's ready for that move. I haven't seen enough personally to be like, oh, he's going to be nailed on. Slightly different with yourself and Pais, who played and ran the show for Independiente del Valle this week. But I would suggest anybody at Real Madrid just have a word about limiting his usage a bit.
Why did the Liverpool player do that? Because it is exactly as Ollie described. Endrick comes on the field of play and he sort of trots onto the field and the Liverpool defender just marches up to him, and it's not a tap. Like, it's an elbow.
It
was
in the back.
Reminiscent of a car crash we had earlier this week. Like, you know, he really gives it to him. But did he do it? I thought, because was Endrick combing his hair as he came on the pitch? He was doing something, I think, that annoyed that player, because otherwise it's just like, you're a moron for going straight up to Endrick and doing that.
I mean,
because the ball was barely in play.
No, like, they hadn't started play yet. This was literally just somebody. But I, you know, lower league football, they get told to do things like that. Even in England, you know, non-league football as well. Like, oh, if there's their superstar striker, you know, you put one in on him or you unsettle him straight away. And I think this is just a case of the difference between Palmeiras and Liverpool is the difference between like a Premier League side and probably a League One side, I'd imagine, in terms of the financial resources that they have and the quality of player coming through. Although Ignacio Rodriguez looked really good actually for Liverpool, as did the other Rodriguez, whose name slips my mind. They had a forward and a defender that both were very good in that game against Palmeiras. But I think it's just a case of, right, I do think it's a target on your back more than being a, oh, you're combing your hair or anything. I think it's just a really stupid move by a player, but it's also probably what they see is the way to do it when you're dealing with a, you know, 16, 17-year-old who could probably run rings around most of these players at the moment.
Mm. I'm not sure he was combing his hair, but he definitely, I think, was doing something as he came on, because he threw something back to the bench as he comes on.
I'm a big fan as well, though, of Endrick with the shorts pulled up. There's a real throwback look about him. As a youngster, he's got quite a baggy t-shirt as well, probably just because he's not that big at the moment. So they're like small men's is too big for him. So he's got the baggy t-shirt, but then the shorts pulled up. So they're like almost throwback shorts. He stands out on a football field as soon as he comes in. And they do have a great youngster, actually, Palmeiras, who scored his first goal for the club and was electric all night down the right flank. Another 16-year-old, in Esteval, who looks, if they're losing Endrick, we've got the next one up. And I think that's sometimes what you see with some of these clubs. There is a consistent conveyor belt of next one up. And Palmeiras have brought quite a few players through, or harnessed players at their young age over the last 4 years, and built this great team under Abel Ferreira that continues to get to semi-finals in this competition. And Estevão might be the next one to get some praise coming out of perhaps European football in the next few months or so.
yeah, can't talk about teenagers without including Echeverri from River, who's 18-year-old. I think he's been signed by City.
Yeah.
Obviously.
He's been signed and he's back on loan. Yeah, it cost him about 15 million, I think, something like that.
He looked quality for River. And River didn't look great, but he looked very good. Those are the young players, Ollie.
Is it a shame, by the way, that we're talking about two young players there already out of kind of three or four? Well, in fact, three of them are going to be in England or European football by July. Pay is going to be going to Chelsea this summer.
He's bought by Chelsea. He's going to be loaned out to Strasbourg.
Okay.
To the people that own Strasbourg, own Chelsea as well. Maybe, I don't know. However it works, if they've got all their feeder clubs. Yeah. So, yeah. I don't like that, by the way.
I was going to say, they're not going to be, though, on this continent in a few months' time. So if you're going to see them, this is the only chance you're going to get to see them at their original clubs, which is a shame, particularly for an Independiente del Valle side that if you keep them around, you've got a really strong chance going through the knockout stages, arguably.
IDV 30-1, bet of the tournament to win it.
They're always the bet of the tournament to win it. This is a great team.
True. But from what I've seen, I was almost, when I covered them this week, I was kind of looking for Pejorano in the squad list. Only he must be about 43 by now, so he must have retired. There's a few names there, but IDV have done it again, Independiente del Valle. I think it's a cracking squad. From what I've seen, the Brazilians and certainly the top Argentines don't look great. So, yeah, I mean, you never know at this stage of the tournament. It's a long tournament. Finals not till end of November. So things can change. Players can get bought and sold, etc. But
the Brazilians are slow out of the blocks, but like match day one was slow out of the blocks because of all the rotation of the squads that we discussed last time out. This week, I think it's just down to, you know, there's a danger in arrogance in football. And the Brazilian sides have the might, the muscle and the squad depth. But they, you know, Grêmio went out this week, hit the post inside 25 seconds and were like, we're going to walk this one, boys. Don't worry about it. And Huachipato from Chile knocked them off their perch quite dramatically on home soil as well. So, things getting stale in Brazil, like we've seen maybe Paris Saint-Germain, obviously, in European football, could be problematic for some clubs. Not all of them. They won't all get picked off, obviously. And I think Palmeiras, Flamengo, two best sides probably in the competition. But others could stumble and fall if they get overly confident.
Let's talk about the old talent on display this week. Obviously, you've got Hulk trying to score from 50 yards, as always. But I just want to talk very briefly about Damien Diaz. Number 10, currently playing for Barcelona in Ecuador. He is literally a throwback to the early 90s, late 80s footballer. He's a number 10 that can't run. Like, he actually can't run anymore. He's 37. And yet, he's just got that amazing ability of like just being this beautiful luxury player. I mean, between the ears, it's all still there. Lovely technique. Scores a cracking first goal. It's goal of the week in the highlight show. Zips home his pen, and Barcelona should have won in the end. They conceded really late on, as they did in match day one, actually. They've drawn two from two. But basically, Damien Diaz, just a genius. He's my favourite player. Him and Pais, and he could be Pais's dad. They're my two favourite players to watch after 2 weeks of covering the Libertadores. So Damien Diaz, I mean, that player simply does not exist anymore, because at 14, someone realises he can't run and he's not taken by any club. And I just love a walking footballer. I also love the fact that he spent the entire game 1 yard away from the referee, just in his ear the whole game. He's just talking, chipping away in his ear. Ref, did you see that? Did you see that? What about that? What about that? Referee. He's trying to referee the game, which I know is kind of ugly, but also just he could get away with it because he's Damien Diaz. Magnificent.
Yeah, you give them that leeway as the older statesman of always talking in the referee's ear. Also, if it's not like aggressive getting in the face, it's just constantly, it's almost like he's running alongside the referee for 90 minutes and going, oh, that looks like a free kick, doesn't it? Oh, that's not good.
He's the devil and the angel in the referee.
Yeah, can't be challenging like that, can you? That's a naughty one. God, if I was officiating, I've seen bad tackles in my time, I tell you, sir. I tell you. And then he gets it to his feet, shoves the referee away for a moment, spins on a sixpence, and then plays a through ball through. Yeah. And I do get what you say about the walking football. I mean, you think about like Dimitar Berbatov. You never saw him sprint in his life, but he'd somehow get box to box and end up on the end of a ball in from the right flank or something like that. And European football's got faster. That player doesn't exist because it can't really work. I mean, I think Zlatan at Milan was probably the last one that could necessarily do it, and that works only in that either front man or number 10 role. And Damien Diaz is kind of playing that number 10 role. He's a puppet master. And who doesn't love a good puppet master in a football team just pulling the strings all over the place? The fact he's doing it at that age and is still at Barcelona as well. I like the fact that he hasn't been moved on to another club that has gone, oh, you're old, but we could do with you. Actually, look, Tejera's making their first Libertadores appearance. Is it ever?
Certainly in a while, if not ever.
In a long time. That would be the kind of player that you could imagine a Tejera de Cordoba going and getting and saying, all right, we'll stick Damian Diaz in behind. But they play some lightning quick football when they want to. As JC John Cotterill was telling us, that they kind of have spells of pushing forward and being aggressive and then not. He's seen a lot of them during the Argentinian season as well. And so the fact that Damian Diaz is still in that yellow Barcelona shirt, still operating on all cylinders, doesn't need to get out of a jog, a slow jog at best. I mean, do you watch him in warm-ups? Does he have a little run then?
I'm going to keep a close eye on him now.
Next time, yeah.
For sure.
Need to have a look.
He's an amazing... I really hope you do him next week, Ollie, because he's an amazing player to watch. And they got... I think they're home against Palmeiras or home against Sao Paulo, whoever's in that group. They're home against one of the big boys from Brazil.
Sao Paulo.
And that's because... You know, Barcelona, they were leading in their first two games, conceded with the last kick of the game in both those games. So they got to beat Sao Paulo, really. And that should be a cracker, really. I mean, it's not the same Barcelona side that we saw in, you know...
Well, we had their name on the trophy during the qualifying stage.
100%. But then they had, like, Fidel Martinez, and who was the... I can't remember who the number nine was for them then. But do you remember? He was like a unit. He scored goals, held it off. They don't have that anymore. They've still got Riveros that plays for them and the keeper, Burray. But I mean, Barcelona one to watch. But just before we talk about other things, Ollie, who's going to win it based on what you've seen, by the way, so far?
You've done Palmeiras. I'm always going to go with the Brazilians. Yeah. I will happily say either Palmeiras. I haven't seen Flamengo yet, but by all accounts, you know, the new Brazilian season started this weekend. Palmeiras and Flamengo are the top two of who's going to win it. I think you probably put that straight into the Libertadores. I would love an Ecuadorian side to win it. I think there is this slow, consistent climb over the last 5 years that we've been lucky enough to kind of see from the early get-go, if you will. And like Liga de Quito have always been in and around, you know, they've won the Libertadores, they've been in and around the quarterfinals, semi-finals for the last 8-9 years at least. But then you look at, there are other sides other than Liga de Quito. I actually thought it maybe be Emelec at one point when we were covering this competition over the years. Not quite the same. Independiente del Valle, though, are the converter of young kids into star players, shift them on to the next one. They've got that conveyor belt. And yeah, Barcelona have been a team that have always been good to watch. So if any of those three, Liga de Quito, Barcelona or IDV, can get to a semi-final, I think I'd be just elated. I'd love one of them to win it.
Can we just talk about Brazilian football briefly? This is sort of a departure, but linked into the Libertadores. I was reading an article about their state championship, and there's a huge swell of thought that says it should no longer exist. As in, what it does is it takes emphasis off the Brazilian league, the Brazilian domestic league, they're like Serie A, and it messes up the Brazilian calendar completely. It takes the focus off that Brazilian league. And the argument in this article was that the Brazilian league has never been able to find an audience outside Brazil. Why is that? And half the reason is that the state championship just sucks so much away from everything because of the way it is in the calendar, right? So the state championship now finishes, like just finished, didn't it?
Yeah.
Like April. And I think there's something to be said. For example, I know that the Brazilian World Feed rights, there was no taker for it until about 2 days ago. And it started this weekend.
Who's got that?
I don't know.
We hunted out and tried to get on comms.
Our boys, Beer of Brazil and JC, will no doubt be doing the opener. But, you know, they couldn't find anyone to take it. That's the Brazilian, like they're the best. They've got the best clubs on the continent by a mile. And no one's taken that World Feed in English. There's no one can watch that in English. That's crazy.
I want to know, though, the numbers in Brazil that you get for a Premier League game compared to a Brazilian Serie A game.
You mean Premier League's way more popular?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, but that's the trouble that you're looking at then. If the people of their own nation would rather watch a Premier League English football game from Europe than would rather watch the Brazilian Serie A, what hope in hell have you got of selling it around the globe to a large extent? Because there is so much football. You think about it right now. I mean, we're in the midst of Champions League, Europa Conference League knockout stages, which we'll come on to. Then you've got the culmination right now of Serie A. You've got a Bundesliga title race that could be wrapped up this weekend with Leverkusen. You've got the Premier League title race that's going down to the wire, Arsenal playing right now. Sorry about Liverpool earlier today, David. No need to bring it up, I suppose. But there's a lot going on. Spanish football, obviously you've seen the scenes from Bilbao after the Copa del Rey, so that's just finished, the league title. I don't think it's going to be as narrow and close as a lot of others in European football, but there are all these leagues that are worth keeping an eye on in Europe alone. Then tell me when a European football fan has the time to sit down and think, oh, I guess Flamengo against Palmeiras is on. I mean, I don't see the... Going to the point on the regional Paulistas, the Gauchos, the regional Torneos, I don't really see a problem with that. And I actually think it's kind of great. Because there are small sides in those areas that are able to, like Juventud, able to get to a semi-final of their regional tournament, get to play one of the big boys. That's when the big boys in those regional tournaments start to take it seriously. They're playing reserves during the first phase, just qualify for the knockout stage, then the quarterfinals, semi-finals, final. They bring in the big guys, the big guns, to make sure they have the honour of winning it. For the smaller clubs, it's another way for them to get money playing the big sides, whether it means giving away half your seats in your stadium to allow half of Inter's Red Army to come in and take it over for a day, and you get to be in the spotlight a little bit more. So it's really useful, I would have thought, for those smaller clubs in Brazil. I don't understand how it affects the Brazilian Serie A campaign, because January to April, you have your regional Paulista, the main players, your regional Torneo, the main players are barely playing in that, so it's a nice pre-season warm-up for them. They then go into the Serie A campaign with, all right, we've had some competitive games already, maybe we've got some success. That keeps a Brazilian manager in his job for at least the first 3 weeks of the season. And then you go into a league campaign that runs the stretch along with the Libertadores, which, okay, you're fighting on perhaps both fronts, but you're also in full-on competitive mode at key points in both the Libertadores and the Brazilian Serie A.
Yeah, I'm talking through purely the lens of how do you sell the Brazilian product. And if you're selling the Brazilian product, you can't water it down with the state championships. Get rid of the state championships. Make the sides completely all in on the Brazilian league, as opposed to there's also the state championships, there's also Libertadores. You just make them... I just think it just focuses everything.
But I think they are all in on the Brazilian Serie A, because the state championship's done and dusted by this point. The state championship is like, for some teams, it's just a, we have to win it because... Like, we can't let Santos win it. Jeez, kind of.
Well, apparently it's the Sao Paulo clubs that keep it alive. Everyone else wants to ditch it. But Sao Paulo, which is the richest state in Brazil, like, they have enough sway to keep it alive. Just on the, like, who would watch the Brazilian league in English? I mean, sure. But also, the Argentine league has an English language service. And there's way less people. I mean, there's 250 million people in Brazil, right? There's also a load of Brazilians, like someone like our mate Pedro in London, who might want to watch his team Flamengo with English comms, because he's been in England for 15 years and he probably considers himself quite Anglo-Brazilian at this point.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the market. That's the market for the Argentine league, for example. It's not people in Argentina. It's like, presumably, like second generation's RGs in the US. Maybe people in Europe want to watch River and Boca. So, yeah, I just think it's a shame that something... I mean, if the case was like, why can't we sell the Ecuadorian league to an English language audience? That'd be like...
It's a tougher sell, yeah.
Obviously, it ain't happening. Although, I'd be open to buying the rights for that. But Brazilian league is like, that's not nothing. And considering the amount of crap football there is in the world, that's not crap. Like a Palmeiras Flamengo, is there no space for that on a Friday night in England? Chuck that on ITVX streaming or whatever.
Except for the fact, I mean, those Libertadores finals that have been all Brazilian, A, haven't been a great watch. True. So that's not a big sell for at least a UK audience that's seeing it for the first time. For Americans, sure. There is more of a market for any of these South American competitions in English because of the number of people that have gone up from South America and Central America to the US, made homes there. So there is definitely a stronger connection than there would be, I think, in the UK. Also, the UK, as we touched on actually when we were discussing in a taxi the other day, there's so few people to market stuff at. The reasons why Americans, like in their broadcasters, get paid thousands of dollars a game is because they have 100 million people can tune into any game, pretty much. If it's a big one, like Mike Tirico deserves, you know, $5,000, $6,000 a NFL game because he's playing to an audience of 110 million. Whereas, you know, Saturday night Serie A in the UK,
sure,
you're barely getting a few hundred, but you're only also playing to an audience of probably a 10, 20,000, I would... I mean, I've got no idea what the viewing figures are. So... There is a bigger option, I think, for English language South American football up in the north of the border, so to speak, up in the United States and Canada. I just don't see, though, still how it's a big sell or a big importance for them when they're trying to push their own league. The MLS is a problem at the moment for South American clubs anyway, because they still have the money, the ability to poach players. Do you see what Gianni Infantino said as well to United States Soccer in the build-up to the World Cup?
No. Today, I feel...
The last few weeks, about 6 days ago, I think he said, don't be afraid about spending money to attract stars to your league with the World Cup coming. He's basically saying, start writing checks, getting some big names and make the MLS great again. Yeah, get the hype around it again. Because there was a point where you thought, oh, Major League Soccer might be getting okay. And then it wasn't. And then, look, I don't know what's happening with the Apple TV deal and all that kind of stuff, whether that's improving audience figures
must
or not.
Right? I don't know any of this, but it must be getting bigger.
You'd have thought so. But then the quality of football, because it's become very diluted, they've added franchises in over the last few years. I actually think you could have been better off with, say, 20 really good teams that have a strong stock of quality, as opposed to now having 30-odd franchises where it all then gets diluted out, which then makes life difficult to really see a great football team because there's two or three really good players in a team and the rest maybe not so much. And again, I don't want to do a disservice to Major League Soccer because it is a league that's improving a lot and continues to grow in terms of the way that they market it and expand it. So the US is focused on that, focused on the Premier League with NBC, focused on the Champions League with CBS and all the attention that gets, and any other European football. And again, it's difficult to a sports fan to be like, oh, and watch this, if it's not as good. Which, look, the Brazilian league, there are some good teams that play some really good football that we get to see. The second half of Palmeiras in the Libertadores this week, fantastic to watch. The first half, not unwatchable, but not far off. Mm-hmm. Same with Grêmio. Grêmio went from being a side starting out trying to play some really good football this week and then got frustrated and it became just a scrappy kicking match for a large part of it. And I think I made the point to you as well this week. I actually think the Brazilian sides get brought down on a mental level when really they'd run rings around 90% of the teams in this competition if they just stuck with a strong headspace between the ears and to their game plan. And instead, they start to lose it a bit. I don't know whether it's the heat or what. They start to get frustrated. It becomes a kicking match. There's more diving, the diving and the rolling around on the floor. We need to stopping the game when a player's got a leg injury, not a head injury. Oh, I get that, but
I couldn't agree more on that one.
But we
that's
are
not exclusive to South America, by the way.
No, it's the one of the most frustrating things in football refereeing in general, I think, that doesn't get talked about too much. We have a rule for head injuries and head injuries alone. We had one this week though where the referee stopped the game even though the player was 5 yards off the pitch in a technical area but injured, and we had to stop the game then. It's like, he's off the pitch. Yeah. So we're playing on. We need to continue.
And it gets abused. That's my big frustration. Like, obviously, if someone breaks their leg, you nut the player's reaction immediately. Yeah. But that's not the case 99.999% of those incidents.
Yeah. So I think the Brazilian side take themselves out of the ability to play great football for 90 minutes with their own mental head game. And that kills them as a product to be sellable, because if you have Palmeiras, Flamengo, Grêmio playing to the peak of their powers with the quality that they've got in those sides, it'd be so easy on the eye and you wouldn't think anybody else had a chance in this competition. Instead, you look at it and you think, well, you can get at them. Mm. You've got Diego Costa up front. He could lose his head in a moment. Like, we can get at this side. Jefferson Soteldo, he's a player that's consistently frustrated people because he's got it all and then doesn't quite have it between the ears at points, and he gets his head down, he gets blinker vision, whatever. And so, yeah, I think the Brazilians let themselves down almost to that extent.
Well, you've almost touched on this, Oliver. Let's wrap up by, I was going to ask you, should there be a conference league equivalent in South American club football? I think I know your answer to this. Let me make the case for before you destroy it. Why not?
That's just another question.
No, but there shouldn't be a conference league in Europe, really. But it exists because you've got these clubs thinking, oh, well, you know what? We're not playing midweek. Like, why shouldn't we play midweek, right? So the Conference League is created out of thin air.
Is that why
basically,
it's created?
Yeah. Why else? I mean, and people have looked at the numbers. They looked at the TV deals. They've looked at the money, the, you know, gate receipts, everything. And they thought, yeah, these clubs can make money. Television companies can make money. People will watch it. Bang, it's a winner. And the Conference League has been, I don't know exactly, but it seems like it's been pretty successful so far. So why shouldn't the side who finishes 10th in Argentina, the side who finishes 8th in Ecuador, side that finishes, you know, 17th in Brazil, why shouldn't they be in a Sudamericana B?
So the side that finishes 17th in Brazil, and I'm so glad you picked that number for a reason, would be relegated.
The side that finishes 16th then?
Okay. So in Brazil, we have four positions that aren't either relegation or going into the Libertadores or the Conmebol Sudamericana.
Perfect.
13th, 14th, 15th, 16th. Now, are we turning the Brazilian league into you get a medal and you get a medal and you get a medal? Can you imagine?
Football's already become that. I mean, the Champions League, mate, you can finish fourth and be in the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Call it the European Cup.
Yeah. I want to see a team fighting for 16th in Brazil, as in, we've got to fight for 16th to stay up. Not, we've got to fight for 16th because then we can get into the CONMEBOL like Conference League.
The final game of the season, you can stay up and you get into Europe the same day. So like one goal in the 90th minute, Oli, can keep you probably keep you financially stable as a football club.
You're
keep
everything you in the top tier of Brazilian football.
And also propel you into the Sudamericana B. I'd even want another name for it, like, I don't know, like the Super Sudamericana or something like that.
It's the CONMEBOL Conference.
Maybe the CONMEBOL Conference.
But no.
I don't see why.
You're adding for the sake of adding, which then negates the joy of
sometimes these more
contests.
Is more, Ollie.
Yeah, but
haven't you heard
more
like the more stuff
better.
You have, the happier you are?
Yeah,
that's what they say, isn't it?
You buy the stuff. That's why rich people have all the limos and the boats and everything. That's why it works out.
I don't know. I think especially... I think it's a goer. And you know what? I think it will happen as well because... Mate,
flippant. I think it's a goer. It's definitely the best way for football to go down this route.
The Sudamericana, it's not like it started in 1892.
How many more games do you want to do in a week?
Well, but the Sudamericana, I mean, it didn't start 100 years ago, mate. It started in 2001, I think, 2002.
Yeah, it's an early competition, yeah.
So, all right, we've got the Sudamericana established now, like it serves a purpose, blah, blah, blah. Now's the time for the CONMEBOL Conference League. And I think it'd be great to see, like, you know, I just think it'd be great and I think it needs to happen ASAP.
I think more isn't necessarily better. And I think if you continue to just... Also, you're asking more of these clubs to play more games, which isn't good for them, isn't good for players, isn't good for preventing injuries, things like that, particularly in the conditions that you can sometimes get, in the extreme heat that you'll get. It's going to be even more tiring for players that might want to be focused more on a relegation battle than they want to be focused on a CONMEBOL Conference League tie. I also 100% think the more times that you see teams playing on an international stage, the less special it is. You know, if West Ham are continually in the Conference League,
Champions
them
of Europe.
Being in Europe isn't as special as it was when they were first in the Conference League. And it's like, oh, look, we've actually got European football and we can win a European trophy and we've won a European trophy. That's special. It becomes a... It's not that special if we're in it all the time. That's why the Champions League, teams making it into the Champions League doesn't feel that special anymore. Like, that's the bare minimum. But there are so many spots that are going to be open, in particular with the new Champions League, that City being in the Champions League isn't like a novelty. Whereas back in the day, even when it was two sides from the Premier League going into the Champions League, it'd be like, well, it could be Man U or Arsenal, but what if Newcastle suddenly get into it? That makes it different and therefore makes it something special and something more enjoyable to watch, because those European nights are rare things to hold on to as a football fan. Not, hey, look, we've got another round of group games coming up because that's what we do. We're in the Champions League every year. This is so interesting. And it's not. So we're just negating what makes continental football special.
Yeah, also, I don't know if these clubs would make their money back. As in, if you're lower down the league in Bolivia and you've got to pay... Like some of the travel, I think it's very hard to conceptualise, and I always try and keep the map open when I'm doing games, Ollie, just to look, and I always try and reference it. Like if someone's going from Montevideo to like Guayaquil, Ecuador, it is, I mean, it's like a 6-hour flight or something. Like yeah. It's so, so far. And I always think if you concede in the last minute as well, if you like battered someone, then you concede in the last minute.
6-hour
flight
ride home.
That is a long way home. Mm. And it's so, but the travel is absolutely brutal.
But also a lot of these teams don't play in their own stadium on this level.
True.
And again, touched on it last week, I think that'd be hugely better for the competition if they were, but instead they're having to make trips to sometimes different cities to play in a stadium that is fit for continental football and has the ability to have VAR cameras installed and all that sort of thing, which again some clubs wouldn't be able to afford, whether CONMEBOL would be able to pay for that themselves. That would be another thing, a question that would be raised. Would clubs want to be packing up and going off to a different ground in Asuncion again every single week when it's just more unnecessary travel or a burden of being in a stadium that doesn't feel right? It's not your home stadium. You don't feel like you have that home field advantage. There are too many negatives logistically, as you touched on with the travel and everything else. And there's too many negatives when it comes to just being too much football sometimes.
All right, just finally then. I mean, this was spoken about and has been spoken about over the years. But if the MLS gets big, how can somehow the Libertadores sides and the top MLS sides face each other? Does there need to be a competition there? Or can you get, you know, three or four clubs from the MLS to play in the Libertadores one year? Something like that. I mean, that travel is crazy then. I mean, you're really talking long haul if you're going from fucking Vancouver down to Montevideo. Yeah, I mean, that's absurd.
The Mexican sides don't play in the Libertadores anymore, and a large part of that is the fact that you're going to have Club Tijuana on the freaking border of the United States and Mexico, maybe having to make a trip down to Buenos Aires for a 9-hour flight, 10-hour flight to
get
down there.
You could have a tournament, though, couldn't you?
Well, we have the winners of these competitions facing each other in the Club World Cup, and isn't that being expanded as well? So there's going to be that possibility. I like the idea of some sort of like Latin America v North America competition. Again, though, squeezing it in where you'd necessarily find that, would you have first leg, second leg? You know, the South American model has been to dispel that of a final and instead have a one match only neutral ground. But then if you're sticking it on neutral ground, you're either making 7 hours of flight for everybody, or are you making it up on a home field advantage for MLS 1 year, or a home field advantage for South American teams the next year? There's too much. And if you're talking about we need to get rid of a Paulista or a Gaucho, a Brazilian regional tournament, but hey, let's replace it with travel up to North America, Ollie, for a few weeks and play some games.
I think we're missing a trick. If the winner of the Libertadores, let's say Boca 1 year, don't play.
That's a long time. That
might be 2092 or something. Let's say Palmeiras against, you know, your MLS better than I do. The winner of the MLS.
Yeah, okay.
Like, if there isn't a two-legged home and away, like that gets eyeball. Obviously, it depends who wins it. But if, you know, Inter Miami won it with Messi and Boca won it, that is a great home and away.
I would take, if you're going to do that, take the winners of the CONCACAF Champions League. So the best Mexican or MLS side generally, obviously sides from places like Panama and everywhere do get involved in that too, but you would take the winner of that and another top side from North America, and then you have a round robin against the CONMEBOL Sudamericana winners and the Copa Libertadores winners, and you get rid of the Recopa and do it that way. So instead of having the Recopa, you have just an extended kind of couple of weeks where they all play each other, and then the top two face off in a final or something.
What about
that.
Two from North America, two from Central America, and then the winners of the Libertadores and the winners of the Sudamericana? So there's six teams.
Yeah.
And if we're going to do that, why don't we do that?
Yeah. I mean, there we go. Stacks on stacks on stacks on stacks, and everybody gets to travel 14,000 miles a week to be able to play these meaningless games in front of one man and their dog.